Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, the box office continues its comeback. In the Heights comes to theaters, and we have a review, and we're going to play Elliot Page Blend.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 168 of Real Blend, a planetary podcast that is opening this year's Cannes Film Festival, because why not? I mean, if F9 can go and be a Cannes Film Festival entry, then we can open this show. On this week's episode, the box office continues its comeback. One singular comeback. And In the Heights is going to be hitting theaters as HBO Max. Is that actually how that song goes? Because you sing it every time we mention it.
In the Heights.
It's out of key, too, the way he does it as well.
The first 8 minutes of that movie dropped online today.
Don't watch it.
I'm going to hold off on watching it because I understand that it's a big, cool, splashy.
Yeah, great. It's
opening.
Great.
He compared it to, John M. Chu compared it to like the Lion King's prologue that they used as a trailer.
Yeah.
Really? Interesting. Does it top La La Land's opening? That's really spectacular.
I'm going to say no because I great love opening. La La Land.
It's a terrific opening. Yeah. It's
like, there's nothing wrong with not topping La La Land's opening.
They shut down highways.
Like,
yes. And had one of the catchiest songs in the past 10 years. Anyway, hello, introductions. Kevin's not here. He's on vacation. Oh, he's on assignment interviewing Mr. 305. Yes. So,
I have a theory that this whole I don't like that Pitbull song is a bit, and that's why he's in Miami. He's in Miami right now.
Yes. Hopefully.
Or if he's wearing a pastel suit.
And bringing audio.
You have to. If you're not wearing one, when you get to the airport, they give you one.
They give you one. Yeah. It's like when you go to Hawaii and they give you like the...
Yeah. It's exactly like that.
They drape a pastel suit around you.
Yes, yes.
Gabe Kovac is in the chair. Hello, Gabe. How are you?
How's it going, guys?
Good. Gabe is fighting a cold, as well am I. So I apologize to everybody who is watching us on YouTube because both of us are under the weather. And in addition to us being under the weather, you have to see Jake Hamilton's Metallica t-shirt. Hi, Jake.
I feel great. Jesus Christ.
I know. It's going to be rough. Jacob Fox, 32 in Chicago, by the way. Housekeeping. Well. If you're watching us on YouTube, hello. Hit subscribe. Turn on your notifications. I've told you this week after week. Hopefully you've done it by now. If you are getting us where your audio podcast needs are met... in the description, you will see some information about our premium episode, which is an additional show that drops on Mondays. We've had some really fun games lately, including the two-film challenge, and we often go back and re-debate Oscar years to tell you if the Oscar ceremony's got it right or not. Go to cinemablend.com/realblendpremium if you want to sign up for that, and you get some additional time with the hosts. Okay, so weekly poll. Time for the weekly poll. And this question is stemming from Quentin Tarantino, friend of the show, has been making the rounds, starting to make the rounds on behalf of a book that he's releasing, which is a novelization of his tremendous film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it is an extension of that story. It fills in some gaps and cracks that might not have even existed in the story, but it tells you some interesting stuff in the background. And of course, you know, I'm sure that we will highly recommend this book when it comes around. We can't wait to get our hands on it. But the question that I put out there is, because Quentin almost suggested this, what should Quentin Tarantino do regarding the corner that he is somewhat painted himself into by saying he's going to be doing a 10th and final film? Because, and he was elaborating on this on another film podcast, saying that the last films of some signature directors who he has really come to admire tend to not be good. So he has at least debated in his mind, because Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was as good as it was and received as well as it was, should he end on that film and not stick to the 10 film rule that he's given himself? Gabe, you have something you want to throw in here?
I was going to ask if you had made this, because you made this poll after you read that recent quote, but you just filled us in on that.
Yeah. That is exactly where I came from, because I found it interesting that he's at least, whether he's seriously considering that or not.
Question, Sean. Yes. Does Kill Bill then become two movies?
Well, that's the solution for him. He could just say, that's officially two movies, and I'm going to...
He did say on our podcast that it's whatever he wants it to be, I believe is how he put it.
Yes. So, Jake, the question went out to our listeners. Yeah. What should Quentin Tarantino do? Only two options. Make one last film or end his career on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. First off, tell me what you think the listeners said.
I think they said make one last film.
89% said make one last film.
Yeah.
And what do you say?
I say make one last film. If anything, because, yes, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would be a great swan song for his career. But, then we missed the moment. We missed the chance to celebrate him, and we missed the chance to make it a big thing.
Would you rather miss the moment or the moment to be deflated by a really bad movie?
Yeah, that's
a guy who's never made a bad movie.
I
don't think so either. I don't think he's capable of making a bad movie.
At least not within 10. At this point, I just refuse to believe that he's going to go 9 for 9 and then all of a sudden just whiff on.
Well, and he's not under any obligation to make a 10th movie next year.
Yeah, exactly.
He can wait until he hits that story
I was going to ask you guys, what is the time frame? If you think about it, there was a couple of years between...
Just until he dies.
Yeah,
between now until the day he dies, he can make a 10th.
There was a couple of years between, Bastards and Django, and a couple of years between Django and Hateful Eight, and then a couple of years between Hateful Eight and Hollywood. We're 2 years out of Hollywood. We're getting to that point where we should at least be hearing what the movie.
But he just had his first kid. You know, he's working on that book that is coming out.
Sean wrote a book and hosts a podcast, and he's got however many kids running around.
It's true.
That's true.
I've gotten very good at ignoring
And
them.
What number movie are you on? What number movie are you on?
No, but part of him not wanting to direct is he doesn't want to schlep his family around to whatever location. So think he would get it done. He would get it out the way, and then his filmmaking career wouldn't interfere with the family.
Or he tells another L.A. story, and he just shoots it out of his house. You know?
Shoots out of his house.
Or staying at his
driveway.
I'm taking the opposite approach to this, and while... The first thing that you ever said that made me convinced that maybe my thought is wrong on it is that we would have lost the moment. And you're right. But maybe, first off, my point being that I don't think he's going to be able to top Hollywood. Hollywood is, it's such the definitive Tarantino movie.
But didn't people say that about Pulp Fiction?
How many chances did he have after that, though?
But did any movie ever come out and people were like, yeah, but there's no Pulp Fiction? He kept making classics.
And they said about Jackie Brown.
I said Jackie Brown. Because also, that had the unfortunate task of following Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
yes, it did.
Still a great movie.
And whatever this next movie is has the potential of being Jackie Brown-esque, which is good. But how many times are we going to be
But I think the problem is I think we're talking about two different things. Pulp Fiction revolutionized cinema, yeah. how we looked at how movies could be distributed, how we looked at how movies could be edited, and not to take funded. Away from Hollywood, because there's no one in this in these three little squares that has anything negative to say about Hollywood, but it wasn't spoken about the same way that Pulp Fiction was spoken about when it came out in 94.
True.
So I don't think it has as much to live up to.
Well, who could ever do that twice in their career?
Sure.
Right.
Within the span of 20-something years. Like, sure. That's kind of an impossible task, if that's what we're asking for.
So, and that's why I almost think, like, having the benefit of having it all laid out in front of you and him being able to make the decision of, no, I'm going to actually make that my last movie, might be the more rational approach to this debate, you know, of just, and yes, it robs us of another Tarantino movie,
yeah.
but it also allows him to control the fact that he's ending on a masterpiece. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, here, I've said this before, and he's said this before, that he's really interested in making plays. He's really interested in writing more books.
Yeah.
It's not like we're not going to get Quentin Tarantino stories. So I'm in for whatever he wants to do next. Like, what if he doesn't make a movie for 5-6 years and he writes a couple books, he does a play, and then, you know, 8 years from now, the 10th film from Quentin Tarantino drops and it blows us away because we're so removed from his filmography up to this point.
Yep.
He's had time to gestate a story, maybe experiment with it in these different mediums. Like, who knows?
But he's right in the fact that a lot of classic filmmakers, you know.
Sure. Yeah, but the ones he named made like 80 films. Like, there's a difference. Yeah. They were like guns for hire until they were like in their 70s.
Yeah.
And 80s.
Okay.
Because I figure, I'd argue these days we're getting filmmakers that are still making movies into their 70s and 80s that are still firing at all cylinders. Like, no one's knocking Scorsese. Yeah, you know, who turned in Wolf of Wall Street into his 70s. You know, no one's knocking Spielberg.
Yeah, but on the other side, I look at Woody Allen, who has probably turned out, you know, the last three movies of his that I don't even know what they are.
Yeah, but in the grand scheme of things, that's at the bottom of the totem pole on things we need to worry about with Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But okay, but you did bring up a great question, Sean, which is, is Tarantino confident enough in this decision of 10 movies and then I'm done? And I would love to ask him this question. I'd love for you to ask him this question. To in the trailer to put the final film by Quentin Tarantino.
The final film.
He does it for all the other trailers.
He does what?
The ninth film by Quentin Tarantino.
But he doesn't put the second to last.
would he do the 10th, or would he actually, if he's
Reservoir Dog
him,
hits and it says the first of 10?
That is an excellent question. And, you know, one day down the line, if we meet up with Quentin again, I'll tab that one and remember to bring it up. Okay. No interview this week. We have a couple of interviews that we have stockpiled and we have to hold on to until we get a little bit closer to
embargoes.
Of certain films. And we went hard after John Chu, but John Chu is very, very busy promoting In the Heights and has been doing a ton of press.
The Heights.
And so we'll review In the Heights later on in the show, and Jake will tell you whether it is worth the big screen or
your
HBO
money.
Max, or your money and your time. So let's get to talking points.
And your time.
Quiet Place 2 held on to the box office for 1 week before it was dethroned by another horror sequel, The Conjuring 3. And it opened to a $25 million opening, which is interesting to me because, unlike Quiet Place, it was available for you to just click if you had HBO Max. So, Jake, you wanted to bring this up because I guess you find it fairly fascinating that a good amount of people decided they were instead going to go see Conjuring 3 in a theater.
Yeah, I think it's very similar, very parallel to Godzilla vs. Kong, which had a very similar situation in that it was available both on HBO Max and in theaters. And people chose not just a movie, but they chose the theatrical experience. Much like, the idea of, wow, I want to see Godzilla and Kong fight on the big screen. People also made the choice of, I'm going to see a scary movie. I want to experience it in a theater. And I think that's where a lot of that $25 million came from. It's easy to say, okay, well, Conjuring opened to 40 and Conjuring 2 opened to 41. It's like, okay, well, sure. But like, also keep in mind, like, another big horror sequel just opened last week. This one didn't have the reviews that the other one had, and it was available. Like, that is a lost number that we'll never get. We'll never know how many people would have gone to see it in theaters had it not been available on HBO Max. Probably still wouldn't have hit that $40 million mark, but you know, I think a $25 million opening for a movie available on HBO Max that didn't get great reviews is really solid. And it's especially considering that another horror sequel just opened the week before. And I think the Warner Brothers thing is paying off in dividends.
With Quiet Place doing $20 million, you could almost assume that even if half of that went to Conjuring, you know, because it didn't exist, then it's looking at a $35 million opening, which would be really strong for movies not available in that. You're right about the reviews. Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It has a 58% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's not like the reviews said to the audience, you have to go see this movie. So even though Conjuring is a popular franchise, people still went out of their way. And I think the people who are into the Conjuring franchise are the kind of people who are savvy enough to know that like James Wan didn't return for this one. So that wasn't a lure. You know, Wan's name on horror is enough to bring audience members out to it. And this also, more so than Quiet Place, where you know that the immersion is part of the experience, Conjuring 3 felt to me like a movie where like a bunch of couples, you know, older couples would have been like, eh, it's Friday night, let's just put it on HBO Max. You know, like we're not going to schlep all the way out to the theater. So I think that $24 million is a really strong opening and bodes very well for something like In the Heights, which is coming, which has a ton of buzz around it. And then of course, you know, Fanine beyond.
I mean, this year kind of belongs to, I mean, no, this time 6 months ago, we were all questioning that HBO Max Warner Brothers decision. And I think you could argue it ended up being a really strong decision for them. It doesn't look like they lost out on a lot of theatrical business. If anything, it's I think they've now got five number one movies at the box office so far this year. In the Heights is probably likely about to be number six.
Okay.
I feel like a majority of their movies that are opening are doing really solid, decent numbers in addition to bringing in.
But is that going to be the case in the fall and the winter?
I think
like,
by
they don't have a real competition right now.
Sure, but they also have significantly bigger movies in the fall. They've got Dune and Matrix 4, movies that I think will sell themselves.
Matrix 4 could make a killing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
but more how many... so than Dune.
And that's another movie that I think people are going to choose the theatrical experience.
I hope so, but like we were mentioning with, you know, potentially A Quiet Place 2 dipping into Conjuring's box office this week. Like when you have some of these weeks that we're looking at that have like three major releases and some of those releases are a James Bond movie, like I don't know how much that's going to hold up if they put out a giant tentpole and it makes $15 million or $20 million in its opening weekend when it should be making at that point 40 or 50, you know.
But Quiet Place and Conjuring have the exact same audience. Like Dune, there's a good like is probably gonna have a specific audience, and at this point I don't know what's opening up against Dune, but
I'm scared for Dune, you know, by the way. This is beside that point, but I'm scared for Dune.
Honestly, it doesn't matter when Dune opens and what the circumstances are. I'm always going to be scared for Dune.
I had this thought the other day.
No, I'm not scared for Dune. I'm scared for Dune 2.
I had this thought the other day, and I think it's just out of, again, fear and wanting to get a second one. I already just trusting that I'm going to enjoy it. I wonder if it releasing simultaneously on HBO Max is going to be like a saving grace for us getting the second one. Like clearly they'll have the numbers of like how many people watched it on HBO Max.
Sure.
But without the front-facing numbers, is it going to be a lot easier to be like, oh yeah, it only made $100 million at the box office. We needed it to make like $500 million or whatever number up with. But they can say, oh well, no, yeah, it was an HBO Max play. Let's make the second one.
Just pull the like the 2 minute Netflix model. Like 84 billion people watched at least 2 minutes of it. Like do the whole like, did you think about it? Then you that count 84,000. Yeah, like it's exactly.
But he shot stuff for 2 already, hasn't he?
No, they completely. This was completely a part
one. They're doing the It thing.
Production.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay.
And they haven't greenlit 2, last that I heard.
Now, okay, the difference between It and Dune, though, is that had It Chapter 1 been a failure, it would have worked on its own. Dune Part 1, if you want to call it that, can't work on its
own. Well, no, you say it worked on its own, but not if you know the adaptation, not if you know the book.
Sure, like, and also, like, the end of the movie implies, like, okay, if he comes back, we have to come back. But for the average person who hasn't read that massive behemoth...
It'll work on its own. It'll work on its own as a... It'll definitely feel like it deserves a sequel.
Wait, what are we talking? We're talking Dune?
Dune.
You think Dune Part 1 will work on its own?
Yeah, there's a great... There's an amazing story that they're going to tell about this family traveling across the galaxy.
Well, you and I need to talk about where we think it's going to split.
Did you read it? Did you finally read it?
I finally finished it.
I never read it.
Yeah, there's a whole build. There's a whole, like, I can see where it's going to go and where it would end, because it's a giant story, and they can definitely give you a complete... I mean, we just had A Quiet Place Part 2 was 90 minutes, and it ended on the very end of, like, the conflict. Like, it didn't even have that much going on. Like, they can make something really satisfying that definitely people, I think, are going to be like, oh, there's going to be more to this, because clearly this story isn't finished.
Yeah.
But it'll have a satisfying beginning, middle, and end of this family moving to this... One, doing the thing where it has to introduce you to this giant universe and this new concept of whatever this fantasy sci-fi world is.
Sean will actually appreciate this because you've been in this situation, but I had a friend, and I got the joke whenever he initially did it, but now I get it on a deeper level. So you guys know my place faces east, and I have no blinds in my living room, and I've got these giant ass windows.
Yeah.
And the downside being that when the sun rises, you rise because it gets very hot, and again, like, you know, and every time I have a buddy named Tyler who stays at my place, and he sleeps on the couch, and whenever the sun rises, he always goes, ah, Arrakis. And I feel like you guys can understand that because you understand the book and you've been on my couch before.
Yes. That's without funny. Blankets, some of us.
Oh, bellows. Come on. It's harsh. What's the good opening number for In the Heights?
30. We also have to remember that it's a musical.
Yeah.
And we also have to forget that, like,
do you think it's big in our world? You think it's big in our world right now?
I think, like, within film Twitter, everyone's very excited about it and everyone's buzzing. But we have to remember that, like, there tends to be a ceiling when it comes to musicals. And and I think the saving grace for this movie is going to be the strong word of mouth, because I think people are going to like it. But I don't necessarily think, like, I think we have to check our expectations for that opening weekend number.
Gabe, where are you?
That probably sounds about right. I would need, admittedly, I'd want to look and see what... I tried to look to see what A Quiet Place or Conjuring opened up to, how many theaters are actually open, but I couldn't find that number. I'm just curious how close to quote-unquote normal we are as far as physical theaters being open. And then I saw in my market, there were some theaters that were still doing distanced viewings,
mm-hmm.
and then there was some that I saw where you could just pick any seat and they looked like they were all good to go. So,
interesting.
So, like, I have no idea what situation we're in, which would influence that a lot, but...
I got told something today... Right. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I got told something that I have not been told in a very long time today. You know, you guys... we're all seeing Fast 9. I'm seeing Fast 9 on Wednesday, and I asked if I could bring a guest, and I was told, bring however many people you want, which...
I was told that for my Fast 9 screening also, but then for Cruella, I was told you can't even bring your kid. Like... So maybe Disney's being really strict and Universal doesn't care.
Yeah, I think it sounds like it's just a difference, yeah.
I guess.
Well, that's because, you know, Vin Diesel wants you to go to the movies.
It's family, too.
It's all family. Family!
It's all about family.
I don't know if I told you guys, but I'm actually buying a yacht, and I'm going to sail over to Cannes and watch it there for the first time. So,
wouldn't it be amazing if, like, we're looking at Cannes coverage and in the background, there's, like, all the shots of, like, the Fast 9 cast, and you just see Gabe in the background, like, and he's just got a Speedo on.
Wait, we have to
from the film festival that brought you Drive. Fast 9.
We have to fill people in on the fact that the Real Blend text chain has been buzzing for weeks with the fact that Kevin adores the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah.
And Gabe...
Like, unironically.
Right.
And that's okay.
Legitimately one of his favorite film franchises. And he's gone so far as to say, and listen, we adore him for this, he loves the characters. And he thinks that Dominic Toretto is
The only difference between Kevin and me is he says he loves the characters, and I say I love the characters. I use air quotes around characters.
Gabe hates the movie, and Gabe will playfully jab Kevin by saying, I can't wait to go see this really bad movie on the big screen, because he knows this is his expectations.
I'm excited. It's going to feel like it's the summer, and I'm at the movies.
We'll see how that all plays out. Okay.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
We're getting into this week in movies conversation, and I want to tell everybody that we're going to talk about Loki episodes 1 and 2. All three of us have been able to see it. Disney gave us advanced screeners of it, and so we're not going to obviously give away spoilers for it, but if you want to go into the episode as clean as possible, you might want to skip forward to the next section of the podcast, and Gabe will have it annotated in a way, I think, right? You'll be able to do that?
Yeah,
so I'll start, and I'll basically just say that the first two episodes of this show are a lot. It was a lot to take in. And to the point where I'm really looking forward to, I've watched the two episodes once. PJ wants to watch them. We're going to watch them tonight. And I'm really looking forward to going back through it because it's a ton of information to take in. And I saw someone's tweet that said, well, I guess Marvel's just given up on casual fan, you know? And I didn't get what they meant by that. But literally, if you're not into everything that's going on in the MCU, this show, more so than WandaVision, more so than Falcon and the Winter Soldier, is not holding your hand and just it's going full bore into even to where it picks up. You know, like that was a moment in Endgame that casual fan might not have even realized what had happened. And it's when Loki takes the Tesseract after the Avengers have time traveled and he disappears. And this show begins by telling you where he goes, and it introduces the TVA, which is the Time Variance Association. Is that correct? Authority sounds more correct. And they're in charge of policing the what's determined to be the infinite timeline or the holy timeline that these three guardians have.
Giant lizards?
Shepherded
he calls them giant lizards all the time.
But I didn't know if he was like doing it as a joke or if they are actually giant lizards.
I saw one at least look like he had lizard features.
Like in the statue?
At least one of them. But he definitely was like doing a Loki jab, like these three lizard guys, you know, things like that.
So Loki gets put... So it's essentially that time, that scene in Endgame where the Ancient One is explaining to Bruce Banner what might happen if you divert from the timeline. But it's that on steroids, because essentially anyone who causes a divergence from the timeline is called a, what are they called?
A variant,
right.
Yeah.
And Loki has now become a variant because of him taking the Tesseract and disappearing. And so you get plunged into this world with Owen Wilson as your host, essentially taking you through it via Loki, of saying these are the people who are in charge of the timeline. And anytime it gets disrupted, they have to intervene. And it's a whole world of, you know, of potential that could have impact on the Marvel Cinematic Universe because it has these agents.
M word they keep using.
Do they use multiverse?
Well, they specifically, I don't know how far we want to get into this, but they specifically mention like, hey, if this messes up and all of this happens, then we create a multiverse and we can't allow that to happen, implying that they're... is not
That's
a multiverse at the moment.
Yeah.
By the end of the show, who knows? We've only
there could be one of madness coming.
There could very well be one of madness. But I loved it. I really did enjoy it, and it's hard to pass judgment on it in a way that it was a little bit hard to pass judgment on WandaVision after a first couple of episodes, because think how different that show was by the time it ended.
Yeah.
You know, versus the sitcom spoof that it ended up being, and then it went in a million different directions.
This one feels like, and I don't know, maybe there are expectations there that I have that I'm not even thinking of, but a through line that we had between the two previous shows was the first few episodes set up a lot of storylines, set up a lot of characters, set up a lot of different things that are really exciting. We get excited about them, and then the show is like, we're only going to tie up a few of those, and it kind of falls flat because we're used to getting the full resolution. This feels like it's really exciting. It's got some big ideas, but it doesn't feel like it's doing anything that it couldn't wrap up in six episodes. Like, to me, it doesn't feel like there's too much there that is going to get left on the table. Like, it feels like it's kind of more reserved in the way that it's setting up the sort of story itself within the show. But I really enjoyed the first two episodes. I loved Owen Wilson. Getting to be Owen Wilson. Like, they hired Owen Wilson to be Owen. We didn't get one of those yet. Yeah, and I wonder if we will. Because his like, one of his first scenes, we got the Owen Wilson whisper acting, where he's, like, leaning into somebody. And he's like, energy we have right now. It's just, he has one of those. And I was like, oh, okay, great. Like, so I hope by the end of this we get a wow. But he fits. He doesn't feel out of place. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't feel
distracting. They have great chemistry together.
They have great chemistry. He doesn't feel distracting at all. I love the TVA, the sort of vibe that they give the TVA is the DMV.
It feels like a very
boring, draining sort of government facility.
A lot of paperwork.
A lot of paperwork, yeah. So, it has some of the... It's a good mix of, like, the Asgardian with Loki. Like, we feel that world a little bit with the stuff that we see. It has the James Gunn sort of color palette here and there of the sort of intergalactic world. So Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, one of the things I thought was most interesting, though, is, you know, the character of Loki has changed a lot, say, over the last 10 years, in particular from the first Thor. And, you know, but from the first Thor to the first Avengers, he didn't really change. He was still, like, that very menacing, untrustworthy guy. And then we sort of got to know him and realized that there were multiple layers to him. But this is not the Loki who we got to know when we're deeply saddened who died in Infinity War. This is Loki from 2012. Like, this is the Avengers Loki.
And I had to keep reminding myself that.
Yeah. Like, he knows nothing of the Dark World or Ragnarok or Thanos or, you know. And I find Hiddleston does a really great job of, like, playing him as he played him back in 2012. But it's also really, and there are, without getting into spoilers, some really interesting developments that arise from the fact that he does not know the things that we know that were to come of him. Right. And I think that's also going to have a massive ripple effect. And I ask you guys, do you think the resolution of this show, with it being all about time, is that he is placed back into the MCU, that Loki is placed back into the MCU? Granted, he's the Loki who we... From the Avengers timeline, but does the Thor of today end up coming across the Loki from Avengers? Is that the end game, no pun intended, is that the end game of this show, to put him back into the MCU?
I don't think that would be off the board necessarily. For reasons that aren't story driven, although we'll see if story driven is the way to go. I think Hiddleston really likes playing the character.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the point, though, right? Like, there's no point in bringing him back unless Hiddleston has intention to play him for several more movies. Like, don't bring him back and then kill him off in the next movie.
Yeah, exactly. And he's the type of character that you can insert into other places. He doesn't have to be, you know, a focal point the way Tony Stark or Steve Rogers would be. You know,
sure.
he can get introduced in other places. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. One of the things I found exhausting about this show, if I have to give any kind of negative to it, is that it's a little bit, and tell me if you guys had this issue with it, because Loki as a character is always talking in doublespeak, and you don't know what he's saying is true or a lie, or if he's deceiving you or not. But then everyone in the TVA almost feels like they have their own agendas as well, too. So I don't know if they're telling the truth or not. That for multiple scenes, I was like, what am I supposed to believe?
Yeah.
You know, like, what is real here kind of thing? Yeah. And they eventually settle it, usually. But did you guys run into that at all with this?
Not really, just because I sort of kind of went with the, like, eventually it'll be explained eventually. Like, I kind of like not, you know, also, and that kind of ties back to the whole, like, I love the water cooler release of episodes now, that an episode will come out and then we will discuss what do we believe, what do we not believe. I do have a question for you guys in terms of, like, casual Marvel fans versus very serious Marvel fans, without saying what it is. Did you know what the end of episode 2 meant?
Yes.
You did?
I did, yeah.
Okay. I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
I looked it up, and now I'm intrigued, but...
Oh, I didn't look it up.
Yeah. Well, that led to... There were other questions in which we can't discuss right now, but we should probably take it offline as well, too. But I had a lot of questions about, like, the reveal at the end of episode one created a lot of questions that then episode two just created more questions about
right.
And we have to stop there.
to round this off, I think we all, I forget if we got to hear from Kevin, if he saw what he thought.
I think Kevin said it was his favorite first episode of a Marvel show.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that.
I think it's great. I think it's great. Great cold opens. Great vibe, like great tone. Yeah. The show has a great tone.
Very, very like Terry Gilliam in a way.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask this again. Like, is Marvel going to whiff? Or is Marvel just so in control of what they do that they're not capable of geez, what'd you guys do here?
Oh, I thought you saw the ending of WandaVision.
I love the ending of WandaVision. WandaVision is top five MCU for me.
It doesn't
you can't
categorize that as a whiff, though. Top five.
Not the least bit. It's amazing.
I think you don't necessarily have to think it's amazing, but it's not a whiff.
No, it's not
a whiff. Perfectly good resolution to that story. And it sets us up for what's to come.
Look, one of us has a hard out, so let's not do this.
Good idea. All right. Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway is also opening from Sony. Obviously, Jake has not seen it.
What a transition!
It's called The Runaway. And it's only available in theaters. So if you want to go see it with your family, head to the theaters to go see Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway. Which takes us to the other film that's going to be available, not just in theaters, but on HBO Max. And it's called In the Heights.
In the Heights.
It goes that way. So, Jake, you're the only one on this podcast who has seen it.
How is that possible?
Damn it. Yeah, I'm just, I am
They've screened
furious.
It like 1,000 times.
Not here. Not here. That's How many times have you seen it? Like 5?
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about it. How is it?
No.
Worth seeing?
It's absolutely worth seeing. If you are at all familiar and a fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda's style of musical, in particular, obviously, sort of that rapid-fire dialogue made popular by Hamilton, you watch In the Heights and you go, oh, like that's kind of where he was warming up. That's where it's at. It's a vibrant, exciting, energetic movie. John directs the hell out of it, man. Like, just the thought of what he had to do to pull off some of these sequences exhausts me. Like the opening 8 minutes, which they put online, and I beg of you, don't watch it in advance. Like, experience it in like the first time in a theater on the big screen. Okay. If you feel safe to do so. And because I got to tell you, that first opening 8 minutes, tears came to my eyes, man. I was so into it. And
really?
I can say this because they talked about it being compared to The Lion King. Like, it's 8 minutes and then cuts to the title card. And when it cuts to that title card, I just went like, like just was just exhausted. Like, I felt like I was just on the Peloton. But it's just, it's a really beautiful movie. It's really, you know, it brings forth a neighborhood or a culture that every major city has. Like, I've been doing out live shots here in Humboldt Park, which is sort of like Chicago's equivalent of Washington Heights. It's really great. Now, if I had to knock it for one thing, it's probably 3 or 4 songs too long. It kind of does the Return of the King thing in the last act, where I kind of thought every song was the last song.
Oh,
and then, like, it kept going. I was like, oh, like, there's more. You have more to sing. Now that I sort of know, if I were to rewatch it, maybe I wouldn't have that feeling because I know what's to come. Because I'd never seen it on stage before. I didn't really know. I'm experiencing, that's probably some context, I should say. I was unfamiliar with In the Heights. I absolutely loved it. If you get the chance, it is every bit as much a big screen movie as there is out there right now.
This is ignorant, because I have not seen it on stage either. Is there a story per se, or is it just like a day in the life of this neighborhood?
There are threads of like different characters at different things going on, but there's not a like through line. Like, we need to complete A to get to B and have C happen. It's not quite like that. It's more of like submergence into a culture.
Okay. Then I'll be interested to see how that holds my interest, because I tend not to like day in the life of location movies in particular, but I guess musicals can play out differently as long as the music and the choreography is entertaining. Yeah. And from everything I've seen from a visual standpoint, for In the Heights, that is absolutely the case. And you're saying, even like, 'cause I've heard some people say like, it's going to be really difficult to know that this is a click away on HBO Max, and they have to wait to go see it in a theater like by a couple of days. But you say, hold off, don't watch it at home.
Unless you absolutely positively have to watch it at home, if you have the option, if you have the ability, if you have the health to be able to go to a theater, see it in a theater. It is absolutely a theater movie. And again, people are kind of experiencing this right now. The first 8 minutes are out there. If you haven't already, do yourself a favor. Don't watch it.
Okay. Yeah. As someone who was late to Hamilton, you know, and then finally watched it on Disney Plus when they made it available and realized how wrong I was for waiting that long to catch up with it, I'm eagerly anticipating it. And Corey Chichizola, who works on our staff, who is our Broadway fanatic and loves Lin-Manuel, and he claims that In the Heights is better than Hamilton. He likes it more. So... yeah, well, that face, you can make that face all you want.
Is he the one who did the Lin-Manuel Miranda interview for you guys?
Yes, he did.
That was a great interview.
Thank you.
That was a really great interview.
I'll tell Corey that you said so.
Shout out, it's on YouTube. It's on the Cinema Blend YouTube channel.
So Anthony Ramos is playing Lin-Manuel's character.
Correct, yes. But Lin-Manuel is in the movie briefly.
How's Anthony? Great?
Oh, fantastic. Oh, he's unbelievable. Yeah. He's got the stuff.
That's what everybody says.
As they say.
I'll use this as an opportunity to tell my hilariously embarrassing Anthony Ramos story. Have I ever shared this with you guys?
I didn't know you had one of these.
Did it happen at the Star Is Born thing in Toronto?
Yes, it did. Yes,
oh, no.
It did.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just tremendous.
Wait, you know the story, Jake?
I don't know the story.
Oh, okay, okay.
I had to be somewhere around there, right? I had to be in the proximity of where this happened.
You were there.
You were in Toronto.
You were going to be going to the BFCA meetup where I know you weren't able to be there, but Dad was working and he was going to be coming home soon. But prior to the BFCA happy hour that they had where Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga came and like worked the room, they did an interview on the northern side of the city. And very select press, myself included, thank you very much, was able to go and do a press conference with Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, Anthony Ramos.
And then you got TV the next day.
Yes.
You selfish son of a bitch. And I got TV the next day.
Well, Warner Brothers likes me a lot. And so...
How many times have you seen In the Heights?
Doing... none yet. They weren't doing one-on-ones. They were just going to do a small press conference, intimate round table. But then, like a day or two beforehand, they said, Anthony Ramos is willing to do a couple of one-on-ones. Would you be interested in speaking with him? And I said, yeah, of course. You know, that'd be terrific. And I knew he was playing Lady Gaga's friend in Star Is Born. But I'd never seen Hamilton, so I did not know that he was in it. And we were having a conversation, and he was saying... But I led with just sort of a softball question about... No, I didn't blow it, thankfully. I led with a kind of a softball question just to get the conversation flowing. And he was like, oh my God, I've been so into this music coming up and growing up in this neighborhood. And then of course, you know, to get something like Hamilton. And in the back of my mind, I said, oh shit, he's in Hamilton. And I was so happy that I wasn't like, you know, that I just like, ignored that kind of thing. And then I was able to be like, yeah, obviously, you know, working with Lin must have been and he went off another thing, but I had no idea. None whatsoever. And
weirdly
I
enough, Sean did the same thing with Lin-Manuel Miranda. He started talking about Hamilton. And Sean goes, oh shit, he's in Hamilton.
I thought you were in Mary Poppins.
That's great. That's nearly a super embarrassing story.
Yes, but I saved myself.
I really thought like my stomach was getting ready.
Sean's cold opener. Like as he's sitting down, he's like, "Hey, this Hamilton, it's pretty good, huh? You have you checked it out?"
No, I did the very. Oh yeah, yeah. And in the back of my mind, it's screaming. Oh my God! You probably should have looked that up before I spoke with him. All right, this week's blend game. We are playing. Is there a reason why we went into this? Usually, it's a movie that catapults us in one direction, or you just.
It's Pride Month.
Chose it to be. It's what?
It's Pride Month.
Oh, Pride Month. Oh, yeah, that's an excellent reason for choosing Elliot Page.
It doesn't need to be Pride Month, but it is, so why not?
It is Pride Month. Good call. For God's sakes. Are they window washing in your apartment? Is that what's going on?
No, but it's coming, so prepare yourself for that. It's window washing season.
All right, Gabe, since you chose Elliot Page blend, why don't you kick us off on your favorite performance by the actor?
There were a few that I juggled through, and there's some... There are some that I need to catch up on. There are some holes in the filmography that I need to catch up on. Super came to mind. I think they're both great in that, but I think I love Super because of James Gunn more than anything.
Okay.
And Inception was I love Inception. We kind of, I don't know if it's either of your picks, but we kind of talked about how that performance, the performance is fine, but that character is not great. That character is kind of, how would you describe it? Yeah, the character's kind of just like
it's a surrogate for the audience.
Yeah, it's like, guess what? This is confusing. We need someone to explain this to.
Yes. So he asks a lot of questions about like, but what about now?
Exactly. And that landed me on Juno, which I think is a lot of people's pick. Is that your pick as well? We're all picking Juno. I mean,
yeah, it's hard.
I was in high school when Juno came out, I think. And the talk about like one of those movies that just like hits a generation, you know, right. Like just feels totally relatable. Again, those two characters are fantastic. They're both great in it. And for me, that's the movie I think of when you say Elliot Page. I'm like, oh, okay, Juno. Like that's a tremendous performance. That's the personality that I think that landed a lot of other roles. Like there's a lot of other, like there's a through line through their career that kind of fits into the Juno sort of character. So yeah, it ended up being easy. I have not seen, a lot of people are picking this, I have not seen Hard Candy.
Oh, well, so if I didn't pick Juno, Hard Candy would be the one that
I chose. Okay, so that's one of the big holes in his filmography that I should catch up on, that maybe would overtake it, but...
Phenomenal.
That's what I hear.
But would you pick it as favorite, though? Because that's...
No,
it would have to be right. Really, it is phenomenal.
It would have to be really good to overtake Juno.
Yeah.
Because like I said, Juno has that extra layer of like, this was a moment growing up.
And part of the reason why I went with Juno over Hard Candy for favorite is just because it is a crowd-pleasing film, you know, from top to bottom. And it gets into difficult conversations, obviously, you know, but it does it from a perspective that I think Jason Reitman was bringing. And it led to, I thought he had so much potential, Jason Reitman, and did do a great job with Up in the Air.
He still turns great movies.
He's tailed off a bit, although I'm excited to see what he does with
you. Like the you liked Tully though, which is
I did.
Which is him and Young Adult Cody again.
I guess the only one I really shit on then is the one with Josh Brolin and Kate Winslet.
Oh, and the Adam Sandler one's not great.
Oh yeah, Men, Women, and Children.
Bad. Yeah.
Oh okay.
Anyway, back to Elliot Page. It's a hard role to play. You know, it's a difficult character to play necessarily. You're the center of attention in a somewhat quirky universe, you know, and that style of humor can go flat if not handled properly. And I think he does an amazing job of sort of carrying it that way. Bounces off of a tremendous supporting cast, whether it's J.K. Simmons or Jennifer Garner and Jason Bateman. Obviously, everything he's got going on with Michael Cera. It's a great performance in a really great movie. Working off of an incredible, it's Diablo Cody's screenplay, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything clicks about it, and I think it mainly sings because he's as good as he is.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Diablo Cody, and I think that's why I chose this for him, because that type of dialogue could ring false with most actors, because it is sort of that very quirky, I don't want to say self-aware, but it's a very specific type of dialogue that I think would be very difficult for most actors. Even great actors to recite and sound authentic. Like that's how that person normally speaks. But the way that he delivers that dialogue, at no point did I think, oh, he's reading off of the script really well. Like, oh, that's really clever dialogue and way to go. Way to interpret that. I just sort of took it as that's the way he speaks. Like I bought it. Like it, and I think that's a really difficult task to do with the way that all of those characters written, but in particularly how the character of Juno was written. I think that everything, every word was delivered in such a way that it never rang false. It rang quirky and funny and unique, but at no point did it ever feel like he was delivering a false note.
You know, that comparison isn't that far off from Alicia Silverstone in Clueless. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's a that comes across as very believable because of the way that they portray it.
It doesn't come off as like a, you might have used this word, like a caricature or like like an embellishment. It feels
very
grounded.
Very easily could be that way, you know, because it's like a little bit of surrealism to it introduced. Yeah, right. With that version of the character. So I hate that we all picked the same one, but
it's a really powerful film.
We were going to.
Yeah. Rachel Ho went with a film called Into the Forest, which I'm not
familiar
with.
Before we get to audience picks.
Yes.
Our missing host is going to send in theirs.
Kevin is going to submit his pick. So straight from Miami, here's Kevin McCarthy.
Take it away.
Hey guys, it's Kevin. I'm on vacation this week with Lauren and Lauren's dad, but I wanted to send in my pick for Elliot Page blend, and I was going through Elliot's filmography, and obviously there are so many films you can choose from. I think the obvious one would be Inception, but I'm not going to pick Inception, but I do want to explain why I think Elliot's amazing in Inception. The character is interesting because the entirety of the character is basically explaining the exposition of the story, right? So they explain to Elliot's character exactly what's going on with the Inception process, and we as the audience are as curious as Elliot's character, therefore we learn the process through Elliot. And to me, it's a good way to do exposition. I always thought that Nolan did a really good job with exposition. So I do think that's probably my favorite when it comes to Elliot Page, but I'm going to pick another one because I have another personal experience with this, and it's called Hard Candy. Hard Candy, to me, was probably the first time I really understood how great of an actor Elliot Page is. I remember going to this film with my buddy Tristan and two other friends. I remember it very vividly, actually. I remember we ate dinner at California Pizza Kitchen in Fairfax, Virginia. This is how much of an impact this movie had on me. And then we drove to Landmark East Street in Washington, D.C. to see Hard Candy. Apologies for any sound effects that are happening around me. I'm at a hotel in Miami. But so when I sat down in that theater and watched it, I already knew the movie was going to be awesome, but I didn't know how shocking it was going to be. And Elliot Page's chemistry with Patrick Wilson in that film is incredible. Just the way those characters play off of each other, it's a very horrifying experience. But I remember people getting up and leaving the theater during the movie because it was so shocking. And it was one of the first times I've ever seen that actually happen. I remember going to the usher afterwards and saying, hey, someone walked out of the movie. And they're like, yeah, it's been happening pretty much every single showing. Someone gets up and walks out in one particular scene. And I'll never forget that. All right, so the sound effects are getting worse behind me, of course, with my luck, of course. But I'm going to go ahead and end this now. I appreciate you guys letting me send this in for Elliot Page blend and one of the best actors working today, and I'm genuinely interested to see what you guys pick. It's so funny because I think Inception would have been my go-to, but I think I really wanted to highlight Hard Candy. And I remember years ago, I told this on the show before, Patrick Wilson gave me a fan question for Elliot Page, and I remember getting a fan question from him at some junket, and then Elliot Page came in studio for a movie, and I popped that fan question up, and I remember Elliot Page freaking out and getting really excited about it. So Hard Candy's kind of always been a big movie for me personally, just in terms of when I saw it, who I saw it with, what the movie has meant in terms of like that experience in the theater and more. So that's my pick for Elliot Page blend. I miss and love you guys, and thank you for being such good friends to me. I really appreciate that. You guys know exactly what I mean when I say that. I don't need to go into those details, but I hope you guys know that I appreciate you guys. Sorry for all the long texts, but I really appreciate and love you guys very much, and I'm so happy and honored we get to do this show together. I really am. I hope you guys know I mean that. All right, I'll see you guys next week on the show. Miss you all and love you all, and can't wait to see your picks. See you guys.
All right, let's shift to audience picks. I mentioned that Rachel Ho brought up a film called Into the Forest, which I'm not familiar with. Damien McDonald and Corey Chichizola, who I mentioned earlier, went with Hard Candy. Many others did it too. Ezra Cubero went with Super, and John Palmer and several others went with Juno. So thank you for everybody who participated via social
media. Did anyone
choose
Umbrella Academy?
Oh, someone, yes.
Yes. People did say Umbrella, which I haven't seen, but everyone who sees it tells me I should watch it and that I'd like it.
Is that, it's a Netflix show?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Have you seen that, Jake?
The first episode, and I remember liking it. It was one of those things that something came up and I wasn't able to keep going.
It's the guy from the lead singer from My Chemical Romance who's written a bunch of comics. I can't remember his name for some reason.
I did not know that.
Gerard
Way. Thank you. Yeah, he I think like towards the tail end of the band, and then since then he's written a number of comics, graphic novels. And that's one of his. And I haven't read this, but I read was it The Killjoys, I think was what he wrote. Fantastic. He's a great storyteller. So
that's awesome.
Speaking of television shows, we are finishing The Flight Attendant.
I told you, dude. <You're> still... I told you.
We have I thought you only had like one episode left.
We had two, it turns out. And so now we have one. We watched it last night. And
you know it. Well, never mind.
I paused it halfway through this last episode. And Michelle, immediately as I paused it, just like, I hate this show so much. It's like, should we bail? Good. And she was like, no, we're not going to bail. We're going to finish it off. So, we're one step closer. Okay, next week, reach out to us on Twitter. for next week's blend game using hashtag Ian McKellen blend.
You can let us know your pick. I'm so curious to know Sean's pick.
Well, I'll tell you what it's not. you can let us know your pick at realblend@cinemablend.com. Ooh, you know what? I think I might know what it is. At realblend@cinemablend.com, that is where you can also leave us a review. We do not have one for this week. So make sure if you ever want to say really nice things about all of us that you do it sometime soon. We'll read it here on the show. Our next premium episode is going to be a this or that. That's a really fun game that we enjoy playing. The topic for it will be TBD, but you can get access to all of our premium episodes by going to cinemablend.com/realblendpremium. We'll be back next week with a conversation about how In the Heights does at the box office.
In the Heights.
Kevin will be back with us again. You can follow us on social media until then at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach, and at Real Blood. And good Lord, at Real Blood. So many places where you can follow us. So we'll talk to you next week. Any final words for the folks, guys?
The Lost World.
Really?
Yeah. I like that movie.
It's pretty good. I'll go with...
The Adventures of Tintin.
That's a good one. Munich.
Nice. Ooh, God, you just really brought it down.
Yeah, I like picking his depressing ones.
It's a good movie, though.
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh, you brought it down even worse.
That's a different kind of depressing.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.